From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the Senate remains embroiled in a battle to replace a member of the majority party who resigned just days before the legislative session. But in the House, delegates are focused on the social reforms they'd like to see before the end of this session. And Governor Tomlin joins us to recap his final State of the State address, including a controversial plan to raise taxes to close a nearly $400 million budget gap. Those stories coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin delivered his final State of the State address before a joint session of the West Virginia Legislature Wednesday, focusing on his administration's triumphs over the past year and his priorities for this legislative session, making that list of priorities a way to fix this year's state budget, which will end the year with an estimated $381 million shortfall. Joining me this evening to discuss his plans to help close that gap and other legislative proposals, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. Governor, thank you so much for being here.
Very pleased to be here with you.
Let's start this evening by discussing a little bit of politics. Okay. There's some controversy in the state Senate about replacing Republican Senator Daniel Hall, who resigned earlier this month. Right. Elected a Democrat, resigned as a Republican. Where does your office stand on this issue on appointing a replacement?
Well, since there is some contradiction in the code as it relates to that appointment, coming from the Democrat Party, I will have said that I will appoint a Democrat. Obviously, it needed to go to the Supreme Court and let the Supreme Court interpret the law. That's what that branch of government does, and whatever they rule, that's what I'll do. And it's something that needs to be clarified now. I mean, it could always happen again. So, you know, I think it's very important that those appointments are made as quickly as possible, especially when the legislature's in session, in order that everyone's voice is heard through their members of the House or the Senate. So, you know, hopefully in the next day or so, we should have a result and we can get that senator replaced.
Supreme Court hearing those oral arguments tomorrow, likely to have a decision, we think, this week.
I would hope so, yes.
So let's move on to the state budget. Your revenue office is estimating a $381 million gap by the end of the fiscal year. Why do we have this deficit? Why are we facing such a big gap?
Well, there's several reasons. And first is our economy in the country, first of all, is not recovering as quickly as everyone had hoped it would. But the biggest reason, obviously, is what's going on in the coal fields of West Virginia. We've lost thousands of mining jobs, plus all the auxiliary businesses that support the mines. They've laid off people. I understand, you know, now CSX is starting to lay off some of their employees and so forth. So the biggest problem has come just from our severance taxes. And, you know, that's, we get the taxes off of the sales price of coal, obviously. The price is down as well as the production's down. And it's not been a real problem in the last couple of years because as the coal decline being mined, the production declined, the natural gas was going up. Well, at the same time this year, it started back in the midsummer or a little bit earlier, the price of natural gas went to an all-time low. So we got a double whammy hitting us now, especially hitting our severance tax. On the other hand, you know, when people start losing their jobs and things get tight, they don't spend as much money. So therefore, you know, their spending and our consumer sales tax is lower than what it should be, and then personal income tax for those people who's lost their jobs. So it's a variety of things, but basically, it's dealing with our energy sectors and the layoffs, the closing of the mines, and the low price of natural gas.
So you put forward three proposals during your State of the State address to try to take on this budget gap. The first, an increase to the state's tobacco tax. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Our tobacco tax now is 55 cents per pack, and I proposed another 45 cents per pack to bring it to a dollar a pack. And there, you know, and I said in my State of the State address, there'll be those who, you know, think it's too high, there'll be those who think it's too low. So, but I think it puts us right in the middle as far as, first of all, our retailers around the state. You have Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Ohio who have a higher tobacco tax. You have Virginia and Kentucky with lower prices. So what we've seen in the past is people going across state lines as the cigarette taxes change in states to get them where they buy them where they can get them cheaper at. Once they get across the state line, they also buy groceries and gasoline and other things they need. So it really starts to really lower the amount of tobacco tax that we get. So this kind of keeps us in the middle of all of our surrounding states and hopefully will not drive our customers across the state line. And we should raise somewhere in the neighborhood of about $71.5 million from that increase.
The House Democratic Caucus came out right before the session pushing a $1 increase. Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler has also asked for a dollar increase in the past. But what the House Democrats are looking for is this increase to help fix the PEIA budget cuts. These are health insurance benefits, other benefits for state employees. Absolutely. But you're looking to take that on as well.
Absolutely. We plan to put, I think it's around $45 million toward the PEIA. The increase that would the state employees would be paying, that along with a renegotiated drug bill, we've saved a huge amount of money on that. So rather than the $120 million shortfall in there, it'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of 90% of that will be covered. So there'll be a small increase for state employees, but nothing like the PEIA board had recommended originally.
Another proposal you had in your State of the State address was to create a telecommunications tax. Right. Can you tell us about that one?
Absolutely. 41 states charge their sales tax on telecommunications, that being cell phones or landlines, either one. In West Virginia, there's been an exemption on there for a long time, and that's just one of those exemptions, you know, we're trying to get rid of. Once again, that helps us balance the budget. That will bring in somewhere around $60 million. You know, from put that 6% sales tax, basically, or take the exemption away. So you'll be paying that just the same as you do on other services that you purchase or other supplies that you buy.
So, Governor, how do you convince a Republican majority to take on some of these issues to increase these revenues for the state?
Well, if you look at Ashton, over the last 2 years, in fiscal year 15, I cut the budget by 7.5%. 14, 15, and then this current fiscal year, I've already cut it by 4%. So I've, you know, cut the budget considerably, by over $100 million over the last 2 years. Obviously, there's services that some that we're required to have, but some that, you know, our people really depend on in this state. So, you know, when you have tough times like this, even though nobody wants to raise taxes, you know, we've got certain functions that a state government has to perform for its people. And, you know, I would hope the Republican-controlled legislature will see fit to let us increase these taxes. They're modest increases. They're not like huge taxes we had to do back in the 80s. But, you know, at the same time, we have not had a general tax increase in this state for right nearly 20 years. So we've lived within our means when, you know, we've done what we can. We've cut and cut and cut. And, you know, now it's the time has come where we need some additional funds. Obviously, the legislature can control those. If the price of natural gas goes back up or coal production goes back up and our income, you know, comes back, they could always be reduced again. But it's just a tough time. You know, it's good at the gas pump, but it's tough on state budgets. So anyhow, we are forecasting that by fiscal year 2019, we'll start returning with surpluses. And that I'll be long gone, but I've, you know, been very proud of the fiscal responsibility that I've kind of shown in paying down our debts, our long-term debts, our teachers' retirement, workers' comp, public employees' retirement. And those are things we have not cut back on, because that's one of those things that could really affect our state's bond rating, which would hurt us for many years to come. So, even though we've cut the budgets, we've continued to honor those promises that we made 20 years ago for teachers' retirement, to continue to pay that down, to make that fund completely solvent.
I want to quickly get to one final issue before we let you go this evening, and that's the state's substance abuse epidemic. You've presented a bill to lawmakers to require medication-assisted treatment facilities to be licensed. Right. What is in this bill?
Well, basically what it does, and I'm very proud that over the past couple of years, and we've been able to establish over 150 different service organizations around the state to help people. Looking, we created the 1-888 help for WV, which is a call-in line where they will put you in touch if you need help with substance abuse. And those are services we're already offering. What this bill would do would be for the Suboxone and methadone clinics. Basically, right now, there's no requirement. They're not licensed, and they're not required to have any plan for a person when they come in. So basically, what they're doing is trading one drug for another drug. And basically, what we're asking is that these clinics be licensed, that they have the proper personnel there to be able to have a plan to be able to wean people off of hard drugs with the Suboxone or the methadone, and have a period of time where at the end of that they should be drug free. Right now, there's no limit like that, which means people can go forever and still be able to reach a certain high or to use these less potent drugs that they're doing now.
So there's been a lot of controversy over these, but just quickly, is there a counseling requirement?
That is part of the bill. There'll be counseling involved with it. They'll have to have the licensed personnel in there to be able to make sure that they're getting the kind of counseling and the behavioral part of getting off drugs that the people really need.
Okay. Governor Tomlin, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We hope to have you back before the end of the session.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks. Lawmakers are now 6 days into the legislative session, and the Senate is still one member short after a resignation earlier this month. Wyoming County Senator Daniel Hall stepped down from his post on January 3rd, but because of a switch in party affiliation, state leaders are asking the West Virginia Supreme Court for guidance on how to replace him.
An empty desk sits at the end of the second row in the West Virginia Senate, awaiting a senator to fill it. But the question of whether that senator will be a member of the state's Democratic or Republican Party is a complicated one. The seat once belonged to Wyoming County Republican Daniel Hall. Hall served as the majority whip during the 2015 session, the first session Republicans held a majority in the chamber in more than eight decades. But they held that majority because of Hall. Elected as a Democrat in 2012, Hall chose to switch parties after the 2014 midterm elections to break a tie in the Senate and give the GOP the numbers to take the lead. It's because of that switch, however, that many state leaders are questioning whether state code is clear enough to determine who should replace him. According to Senate Majority Leader Mitch Carmichael, state code says,
"The executive committee of the party of the person who resigned the office shall submit three names to the governor to choose." And so that is very clear that the person who held that office prior to his departure was a Republican.
But Democrats disagree. They argue code doesn't specify whether a replacement should come from the party from which the senator was elected or the party to which he belonged at the time of his resignation. So the West Virginia Supreme Court will decide. Still, Carmichael says the upper chamber is continuing with business as usual, and the chamber's leadership is pursuing their legislative priorities.
We're not going to, avoid any issues or obscure any facts based on the fact that we have a member down, that we're a member short. But the truth is, the body operates, it's structured in such a way that it requires 34 members, and the people of that district deserve fair representation. So we're anxious for the Supreme Court to weigh in on this issue.
Governor Tomlin already has the names of six possible replacements, three Republicans and three Democrats. The court's decision is likely to come this week.
The West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals will hear oral arguments tomorrow in the case to replace Senator Daniel Hall in the 9th Senatorial District. Those arguments begin at 1 p.m. Tuesday, and you can watch them on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We'll be carrying the arguments live on the West Virginia Channel, West Virginia Public Broadcasting's new station dedicated to bringing the state programs created by West Virginians for West Virginians. Arguments begin live on the West Virginia Channel again at 1 p.m. and will also be streamed on our website, wvpublic.org.
Ryan Ferns is a Republican from Ohio County representing West Virginia's 1st Senatorial District. He was elected to the state Senate in 2014 after spending 4 years in the House of Delegates. A physical therapist, Senator Ferns chairs the Senate Committee on Health and Human Resources. Senator Ferns was a registered Democrat until the fall of 2013 when he switched parties to run for the Senate. Pat McGeehan is a Republican delegate from Hancock County. He represents the state's 1st House of Delegates district. Elected to his current term in 2014, Delegate McGeehan first served a term in the House from 2008 to 2009, but left office to run for the United States Senate. He currently serves as the vice chair of the Homeland Security Committee. Mark Zatizolo represents the 1st House of Delegates District. A Republican from Hancock County, he was elected to a seat in 2014. Delegate Zatizolo previously served as the chairman of the City of Weirton Redevelopment Authority and works as a hydrogeologist. In his spare time, Delegate Zatizolo says he enjoys singing in a local choir where he performs as a baritone.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, roughly 18% of West Virginia families live at or below the federal poverty level. This year, lawmakers are taking a hard look at ways they can combat not just poverty, but a variety of social issues in the state. Liz McCormick reports on members of the House who are moving quickly.
Members of the House of Delegates are taking on a wide range of social reforms this legislative session, including House Bill 4021. The bill requires adults without dependents be employed or in a work program for at least 20 hours a week to continue to be eligible for SNAP benefits. SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The bill would not affect seniors, people with disabilities, or those going to school. Delegate Patsy Trecost, a Democrat from Harrison County, is the lead sponsor of the bill. He says House Bill 4021 is mainly trying to encourage West Virginians to get back to work.
Right now, the state's in a money crunch. We need all hands on deck. We know by putting people back to work or asking people to go to work, even if it's just 20 hours a week, that's going to generate revenue for them. It's going to generate spending dollars and essentially help the economy.
Another bill aimed at improving a benefit program is House Bill 4010, which would require drug screening and testing of applicants for TANF, or the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. TANF offers temporary assistance to low-income families with the hope of making them more self-sufficient. But the bill would require those recipients to be drug tested before receiving their benefits. If a recipient tests positive for a drug they don't have a prescription for, he or she would then be required to go through a substance abuse treatment program to continue to receive assistance. Children of those parents who test positive will not lose their benefits. Delegate Amy Summers, a Republican from Taylor County, is a sponsor of House Bill 4010, and she says this will just be one way of helping those who struggle with substance abuse.
Our main goal is just to help anyone that has drug abuse problems, and because we can identify people that are receiving temporary assistance, it's a way for us to reach out to these people and to help them and provide them the rehabilitation that they need.
On the first day of the 2016 session, the House passed a resolution creating a new committee focused on combating the drug epidemic across the state, the Select Committee on Prevention and Treatment of Substance Abuse. House Bill 4044 is one of the first bills to be recommended to this committee. It would create the Ryan Brown Addiction Prevention and Recovery Fund Act. The fund would provide money for drug addiction prevention and treatment not otherwise covered by legislative appropriations, Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. Republican Delegate Chris Stansberry of Kanawha County is the bill's lead sponsor.
So the Ryan Brown Addiction Treatment and Prevention and Treatment Fund is designed to help those that don't have any other means of payment. So they don't qualify for Medicaid, or they're kind of in process waiting for that Medicaid to come through, or they don't qualify for any other types of grants, public insurance, private insurance, anything like that. So it's going to be a payer to help them get into recovery.
Stansberry says he also hopes this bill will help decrease wait times for treatment by helping to fund new facilities. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
97 other bills were introduced in the House of Delegates for their consideration today. All of them were rules bills, bills relating to rules state agencies write to implement laws passed by the legislature. Once written, these rules need to come back to the legislature for review and approval. These types of bills are introduced every year, and some lawmakers say there are just too many of them. House Bill 4002 seeks to require that current and future rules and regulations expire after 5 years. The bill was the subject of a public hearing before the House Judiciary Committee this morning. Of the four speakers addressing the bill, three were against it. The speaker supporting the bill represented the coal industry. Here are some of the comments from today's public hearing.
I'll start by stating the obvious, which is first that rules are passed to implement legislation that's passed by this body, and second, that this body has the ability not only to approve or disapprove those rules, but also to change them when they come to you for approval. So this legislation is unnecessary from that point of view.
The coal industry is a prime example of where over-regulation, extreme regulation, antiquated and costly inconsistent regulation impacts our businesses in a very negative fashion. Practically every single activity is governed by a state rule and a federal rule, and in many instances the two are inconsistent, and in most instances the state rule is overly onerous, antiquated, complicating, without a commensurate improved level of mine safety or environmental quality.
When I hear that we have more rules perhaps than other states, there's a reason for that, because we are the only state in which administrative rulemaking gets reviewed by the legislature before it takes effect. Therefore, as I saw before this rulemaking system started and after, this legislature, and because you've only got 60 days, tends to leave a lot more detail to the agency. Other states, because they want to direct the agencies more, the statutes will be much more focused, much more detailed. Instead, this legislature leaves the details to the agency to work out, because the legislature knows it will review them on the way back. So I don't buy the fact that we're more regulated than other states.
Now, you paid attention to the Upper Big Branch trial, didn't you?
Yes.
And you know that people testified that they were ordered to do things and that they did them because they were worried about their jobs, correct?
I heard some of that, yes.
You heard sworn testimony that people were ordered not to, they were ordered to several different violations of safety laws, and that they felt that was the only way to keep their job.
What we didn't hear was questions why you did not exercise your state, your federal rights and responsibilities as a miner to either remove yourself from an unsafe place, call for an immediate inspection of an alleged unsafe act, which nobody is allowed under law to interfere with or discriminate against.
Mr. Blankenship's attorneys could have cross-examined those people, but they didn't do that, did they?
Well,
on those issues that you are citing.
Yeah, I am not personally, and I would question the appropriateness of bringing aspects of that trial, which is still open, I believe, into this proceeding.
House Bill 4002 is being considered by the chamber's Judiciary Committee. As we mentioned earlier in the show, West Virginia Public Broadcasting will be carrying the oral arguments in the case to replace Senator Daniel Hall live tomorrow from the West Virginia Supreme Court. You can watch those arguments on the West Virginia channel or on our website, wvpublic.org, at 1 p.m. Live coverage of both the House and Senate floor sessions begins every day at noon. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.